Good evening. Welcome, welcome. Good evening. Or good morning, good afternoon, whatever time of day it might be for you. So today I'd like to continue on this series I've done, this will be the third talk, and done two earlier talks on Vedana, often translated as feeling, but it's not really feeling, because so often we associate emotions with feelings, which is a perfectly natural thing to do, but Vedana is not about emotions. Instead, it's about the hedonic tone of our experience. That is it pleasant? Is it unpleasant? Or neither pleasant nor unpleasant? So these three options: pleasant, unpleasant, neutral. So it's just this, the feeling tone, or the, some people kind of say, the flavor of our experience: chocolate, vanilla, strawberry, pleasant, unpleasant, neutral. And Vedana arises in response to physical experiences as well as mental experiences. So every single experience that we have, every single sensation that we have, has this hedonic tone associated with it. For example, there might be Vedana of the body. If we stub our toe, there's some physical pain, and the Vedana is unpleasant. But there's also Vedana in the mind. That is, if somebody says something unpleasant about us, the ear is not in pain, but the mind is. So this is a mental Vedana, that kind of like that little bit of a, ouch. And in the Satipatthana Sutta, which is the discourse from the Buddha, or attributed to the Buddha at least, that is on establishing mindfulness. And there's these four, sometimes called the four foundations of mindfulness, the four establishings of mindfulness. And being mindful of Vedana is the second one. Body, Vedana, mind, and then Dhammas, phenomena, we could say. And so in the Satipatthana Sutta, this discourse on the establishments of mindfulness, the instructions are to practice with noticing whether all the sensations are pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral, and then to notice whether they are worldly or unworldly. That is, pleasant, worldly, and unworldly, unpleasant, worldly, and unworldly, and neutral, worldly and unworldly. So what does this mean, worldly and unworldly? It's a little bit unwieldy to say unworldly repeatedly, but so in Pali, these words are samisa and niramisa, and I think literally they would be translated as of the flesh and not of the flesh. So that is it associated with the body or not? But that's not quite right. It's not quite accurate, because there can be mental sensations that are worldly. So of the flesh, not of the flesh, carnal versus spiritual, I've seen that way translated, or sometimes related to the senses or related to renunciation, or leading to craving versus leading to freedom. So these are all these different ways in which we might understand this expression, worldly or unworldly. And an example might be that might be a pleasant sensation from eating cookies. I love eating cookies, and there's this pleasantness about cookies. And there's also this pleasantness that might have from reading or hearing some of the verses in the Tarigata. That is, these liberation poems from these women at the time of the Buddha, when they had some awakening experience, they are some verses that are attributed to them in which they describe their awakening. Beautiful, beautiful verses, and really inspiring and touching, from thousands of years ago, these beautiful verses. Those are pleasant also. So eating cookies, hearing these verses from the Buddhist nuns about their liberating experiences are both pleasant, but they are not exactly the same. And part of being mindful of Vedana, paying attention to Vedana, is to discover and to learn, how are they different? How do they feel similar? They're both pleasant, but maybe a little bit different. They lead in different directions. Eating cookies might lead to eating more cookies and then some revulsion. Oh, why did I eat all those cookies? Whereas reflecting on or hearing these poems from these early Buddhist women in the Tarikata can be inspiring and uplifting and might support us to practice. We'll kind of like rededicate ourselves to our meditation practice, to our Buddhist practice, or maybe we'll be encouraged to read a little bit more, another poem, and feel like there's an opening of our understanding. And for me, often there's a softening of my heart and mind when I read some of these verses. So eating cookies goes in one direction, not so agreeable, whereas reading these poems of the Tarikata goes in another direction, more agreeable, more supportive for finding more and more freedom. And when we reflect on the experience, these like the difference of these experiences, cookie eating, inspiring poem reading, we start to notice, and as I said, get a little bit more familiarity with how it feels. And if we contemplate or allow the mind to rest in the Tarikata, the poem readings, the mind becomes more familiar, becomes more accustomed to that type of pleasantness, that type of pleasantness that leads to more freedom and supports our practice. And becoming more familiar with that, it recognizes that we can start to recognize when this sensation arises earlier and earlier in our experience, rather than it being full-blown experience. So that is right at the very beginning of the sensation, the Vedana is there, the hedonic tone is there. And the more familiar we are with the pleasantness associated with cookie eating versus the pleasantness associated with inspiring reading, then the mind and the body can respond accordingly. Like, oh, I know that it's more fulfilling, more satisfying to be with inspiring poems. Cookie eating, not so satisfying in the big picture, right? Turns out not to be such a great thing. But the more the mind and the body just become really familiar with just that first taste of the hedonic tone, then we can work with it while it's still weak. It hasn't been like a full-blown, it's not after we've eaten 10 cookies, or it's not after we've been reading poems for hours and perhaps we should have been doing something else. But we can, more familiar we are with it, the more we can recognize it at earlier stance, and then we can respond in a way that supports our practice. And of course, it's not just pleasant Vedana that's worldly and unworldly, but also unpleasant Vedana that's worldly and unworldly. And it can be really helpful to be able to recognize when that's happening, and to, when we notice that there's unpleasant Vedana that's worldly, that is this Vedana that's associated with aversion or this something that's unhelpful, then we can stop going, cultivating that or going that direction, because that can only lead to something that's not wholesome. And we know about kusala, akusala, wholesome, unwholesome, skillful, unskillful. And a big part of practice is to cultivate the arising of the skillful and the diminishment of the unskillful. So this is one way in which we can do that, is practicing at the level of Vedana. And so part of the way in how this works, or what's associated with the hedonic tone, are these underlying tendencies. You might have heard of these: greed, hatred, and delusion. These underlying tendencies, because we're not conscious of them. It's not something that we are actively choosing to do. But it's a tendency to react with sensations a particular way. Won't be surprising that pleasant Vedana often activates the underlying tendency of greed, desire, lust, those types of things. Unpleasant Vedana activates aversion, repulsion, hatred. And neutral Vedana activates ignorance or delusion. And for me, what's interesting about this is also so they get activated when we have pleasant, unpleasant, neutral sensations. If we're not paying attention, they just lead right into these underlying tendencies get manifest as some forms of greed, hatred, or delusion. But for me, what's interesting also is that whether there's greed, hatred, or delusion in the mind makes it more likely that the reaction that we will have to whatever sensation we're having will be greed, hatred, or delusion. That is, if there's a lot of greed in the mind, then something that's just mildly pleasant, we're more apt to have some strong greed associated with it. So there's this feedback loop that goes, and it can build and build and build. So just being aware, oh yeah, this is unpleasant, this is pleasant, can kind of undermine or subvert this building of this snowball of greed, hatred, or delusion. So just being aware of these underlying tendencies, even after the fact, if we aren't aware at that moment, it can be helpful. Just because, as I have said a number of times, it interrupts this momentum and this making of this big snowball. Because sometimes we do unskillful things, all of us. And we are very good at explaining to ourselves and everybody else why we had to do it. And there's these big, deep reasons behind what we did. But actually, what pushes us to do unskillful things is Vedana. The Vedana does the initial pushing, and then there's the rationalization that happens afterwards. Often we don't see that. It happens so quickly. There's this unpleasantness, and then we just say no to this or no to that, and then we come up with all these reasons why. But if we can notice that some of the Vedana, the tone, the feeling tone, pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral, then it can make it less likely that we will just fall under the sway of greed, hatred, and delusion, desire, repulsion, ignorance. An example is that we might say, oh, I didn't get angry because we might realize, oh, I see, it wasn't so much that I was angry about what this person said. I was actually angry because I was having unpleasant bodily sensations, and there was just all this aversion, and then I just reacted in a particular way, and I blamed it all on what they said, but it wasn't. I realized, yeah, if I was feeling more comfortable, I wouldn't have had the same reaction. I think most of us are familiar with this idea of being hangry, hungry and angry, uncomfortable in the body leads to our being angry. And just recognize this recognizing this can be sobering. It can be, see how important it is for us to be aware of the feeling tone that's happening in our moment-to-moment experience, because it ends up affecting so much. So as part of the benefits of why we would practice with Vedana is to A, to undermine or stop the momentum of these snowballs, to gain greater clarity into some of the actions why we want to do this. It's also an easy way to disentangle any complexity that we might have, especially in daily life, when we don't have this, maybe the focus or the awareness on exactly what's happening. So we might be able to just say, oh yeah, this is unpleasant. But and I've mentioned this in the earlier two talks, but I'd also like to add this quote from Nyanaponika Thera, who's one of one of the founders, somebody, a predominant person, kind of at the beginning of the mindfulness practice in Theravada in the West. And he writes, if we permit the three roots of greed, hatred, and delusion to take firm hold in our hearts, then their outgrowths will spread far and wide like a jungle creeper. Like there's plants that just grow. And like a jungle creeper suffocating much healthy and noble growth all around. It creates the conditions for unethical behavior. It creates the conditions for us to say and do things that might cause harm to ourselves or to others. So if we can be aware of the Vedana as a way in which we can prevent that from happening. And another benefit for practicing with Vedana is because this phenomenon, which psychologists called my side bias. I learned about this from Pico Analio, this my side bias, which means that we always assume that our views are correct and others' views are wrong. And any information that comes in, I manipulate in such a way that it confirms that my views are right and anybody who disagrees with me, their views are wrong. And the underlying cause for this actually is because there's a pleasant sensation associated that I'm right and everybody's wrong. It's a little bit of this pleasantness of I'm right. And people hold on to that pleasantness and hold on to their views and get pretty dogged in their views. And we all know the suffering that can happen when there's this real clinging to views. And even though there's all kinds of information that comes in that says these views are not accurate, people are unable to let go of them. It comes back down to Vedana, this pleasant feeling tone, this feeling of I have it right, everybody else has it wrong. And so working with Vedana gives us the tools in which we can learn to have views, hold views without clinging to them, without holding on to them in a way that is unskillful and unhelpful and causes harm to others. And as I mentioned in some of the earlier talks, of course, working with Vedana also just in general it helps that there's more freedom. Vedana and the dependent arising is associated with craving, and then craving it leads to dukkha. So I want to talk just a little bit, how might one work with Vedana? I had been mentioning, just noticing in our present moment experience, is it pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral? But it's really helpful to have some familiarity with this so that it becomes really quick in the mind. So one way to do this is to do a body scan. and to initially just scan from top to bottom, looking for pleasant sensations, just noticing the pleasant ones, and then noticing the unpleasant ones, and then noticing the neutral ones, the ones that aren't pleasant or unpleasant. And then do a body scan in which each sensation, just labeling it pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral, after you have some more familiarity, after having done it, then there's this more recognition or sensitivity to it. So that's four different body scans. And then opening it up, so to any feeling, whether or not it's felt in the body. So including sounds or thoughts. And then maybe I'll mention that we don't have to always be labeling it pleasant, unpleasant, neutral. That might be helpful in the beginning, in the first few body scans, or maybe when we're just starting this practice. But then just using labeling just feels tiring and burdensome. So instead there can just be like this recognition, this flash in the mind. Ah, yes, pleasant. Neutral, unpleasant, without actually using the words. So this hedonic tone, Vedana, is always present. I'm getting present and pleasant is always present. It's not always pleasant. It is always present, though. And the point is to be able to readily recognize it. So a natural question that comes up, well, what about this neutral Vedana, this neutral feeling tone? How do we work with it? What is it? I think most of us probably recognize pleasant and unpleasant, but I'd like to talk a little bit more about neutral. I would say that due to their bland nature, they are the most difficult to notice, to pay attention to contemplate, to be aware of. But to notice them can be really supportive of our practice. One is, we might notice how we tend to dramatize or exaggerate neutral feelings. I don't know if exaggerate's the right word, dramatize. We tend to make it into something other than neutral, just so that it's easier to be with and or so that it satisfies this need to be entertained or need to be engaged in some way. When there's this blandness, often the mind just starts to dart wherever it can to find something that's more interesting and exciting. So we want to quickly shift to something and we want to overlay our likes and dislikes. Oh, this is good, that's not good. But when something's neutral, we don't have this habit of liking or unliking. We don't get to express it. But to learn how we are often dramatizing our experiences and that it's completely unnecessary, we don't need to do that. In fact, a lot of harm can happen from it. It can be really powerful just to see this natural inclination. It's a perfectly human thing to do. But if we can not do that, and allow there to be bland experiences, and that to be okay, then we can see that our life can unfold with less drama, less problems, more ease, more spaciousness, if we allow ourselves to linger and notice with the blandness. And as I was pointing to, neutral experiences don't really support our sense of self. That is, the sense of like, oh, I like this, or I don't like this. Neutral experiences don't we're not for them or against them, so they don't really do anything for us, so they don't bolster our sense of self. I'm the person who doesn't like this, or I'm the person who needs that. But it can be really helpful. The more experience we have with there not being a strong sense of self, I like this, I don't like this, is an obvious way a sense of self gets expressed. The more familiarity, the more comfort we have with not propping up this sense of self, the easier it is to find freedom. Because freedom is when there's not a sense of self. The highest freedom, the greatest freedom, is when there is not a sense of self. So any softening, any moving in that direction is a movement towards freedom. And so the more that we can gain familiarity with that, or rest in that, or abide in just the blandness without any drama. I'm using the word drama. There might be some better words. Without trying to make it more exciting, trying to make it more relevant to ourselves and our stories. It can be really supportive. And then neutral experiences, if we don't pay attention to them, then we might have this mistaken idea that there's this neutral, bland experience that's the background to everything else. And this neutral, bland thing is permanent, while pleasant and unpleasant are impermanent. So if we don't pay attention to the neutral experiences, they might kind of like all merge into this background, this stage. And then we might start to feel like, oh yeah, there's this permanentness in which pleasant and unpleasant are arising and passing away. But everything's impermanent. Everything. And so our noticing neutral experiences and practicing with them, we might start to see, oh yeah, neutral. And maybe it shades into unpleasant, so it's no longer neutral. Or maybe it shades into pleasant. Or maybe it just goes away. So to notice the impermanence of neutral experiences, neutral Vedana, can be really powerful, can help create the conditions for us to see impermanence more thoroughly, which creates the conditions for us to let go more thoroughly, which creates the conditions for more freedom, peace, and ease. So in this way, working with Vedana, in so many ways can help lead to more freedom by interrupting this kind of snowball effect of unpleasantness leads us to fill our mind with aversion, repulsion, hatred, which then can feed on itself, and then we might do unskillful things or harmful things. Which is dukkha, of course, right? So if we can nip that in the bud earlier, then we can find more and more freedom. So working with Vedana, pleasant, unpleasant, neutral. Something we don't often talk about, but is immensely powerful. Can help simplify our experience and can help bring greater ease to all our experiences. So may you find freedom amidst pleasant experiences, unpleasant experiences, and neutral experiences. Thank you.